who else is visiting with us for the first time. We already met Matthew. And Matthew, good to have you with us. Anyone else who's visiting with us? Merry Christmas, by the way, since this is the last Sunday before Christmas. Although if the song is true, there are 12 days Christmas afterwards, although no one ever seems to celebrate it that way. I don't know why, but... all right, let's look at our announcements then. There's no Wednesday College Career Fellowship this week or next week, because it just so happens to fall on Christmas and New Year's. So College Career, you can take the day off. Spend it with family. Today, I know we just cleaned up the basement last week because of the Thanksgiving, but it's next week. Next week is fifths. I'm all confused with mixing these weeks around. Next week is the fifth Sunday, and so we help clean up downstairs. Next week is also a combined service. It's supposed to be today because we switched it because it's the very last week of the year, and so they wanted to have a joint prayer time together and just spend the last Sunday of the year together with the Chinese congregation. So we'll be downstairs and have some time of prayer after the service. I think that's it for announcements. Any other announcements that we can think of? All right. If not, one more announcement. I knew I left this up here for a reason. If you didn't fill out one of these last week, please get one and fill one out. Who did not fill one out last week? All right, we'll hand it around and take one if you didn't fill one out last week and fill it out. You know, the elders want it for sake of records, and Brother Moy is like, hey, there's no one from the English congregation in my list. I'm like, I don't know. I definitely sat next to Benny last week, and he was filling one out, so. What? You passed it? So I don't know. He was saying he didn't get any from the English congregation. But he admits to not counting Eileen, so I know that's, I told him that doesn't work anymore. But if you already filled one out last week, don't worry about it. That's taken care of. Just if you didn't fill one out last week and you're regularly attending, please do fill one out, okay? Alrighty. And then... yes, please do. You're still part of us. All right, so fill one out, and then when you're done on your way out, you can just leave it on the table in the back. All right. All righty. So we have today a special Christmas service because it's Christmas, and I don't even know if we've ever gotten a chance to do a Christmas service here. Definitely not in the 4 years I've been here. This is the first time. So I want to look especially at Christmas. And as Jose mentioned, Christmas is celebrating Jesus coming down as a baby. But of course, if you look in our culture about Christmas, and you ask, a normal, person you pass on the street, what's so important about Christmas? You might get many different results, and especially around this time of year, and especially around this neighborhood, if you notice, it gets really, really crowded. Especially go a little bit south towards Queen Center Mall, like all the traffic just increases like at least triple. And any store, sorry, I'm sick. Any store that you wander through just has a ton of people in. and it's just not really that fun to shop around this time of year. Because, you know, like it or not, this Christmas season has been closely associated with buying things and giving gifts and buying gifts and giving and receiving and what am I gonna get for so and so, or what am I gonna get this Christmas season? It seems to be full of a lot of that, and that's been happening for a long time, the kind of commercialization of Christmas. And how do we react to Christmas becoming a whole lot about presents? Well, Dr. Seuss had a solution, or let's hope this plays. I know I have a horrible track record for playing YouTube.
The Grinch hated Christmas, the whole Christmas season. He said, ask why, no one quite knows the reason. It could be perhaps that his shoes were too tight. It could be his head wasn't screwed on just right. But I think that the most likely reason of all may have been that his heart was two sizes too small. But whatever the reason, his heart or his shoes, he stood there on Christmas Eve, hating the Who's, staring down from his cave with a sour, grinchy frown at the warm, lighted windows below in their town. For he knew every Who down in Whoville beneath was busy now, hanging the holly hoops. And they're hanging their stockings, he snarled. The sneer. Tomorrow is Christmas. It's practically here. Then he growled with his grinch fingers nervously rubbing. I must find some way to keep Christmas from coming.
So if you remember the story of how the Grinch stole Christmas, whether it's kind of the version I grew up with watching on TV, or whether you grew up with Jim Carrey, or the new one, which is, Benedict Cumberbatch? Or the original book, which I was trying to find in my house, which apparently I don't have, and I didn't get it from the library in time. So there's a story about the Grinch, and he hates Christmas. Because of all the presents and all the gifts and all the hangings and all that stuff. And he decides his solution to make Christmas go away is to steal all the presents, steal all the Christmas trees, steal all the decorations, everything. And by doing this, Christmas will not come. And so at the end of the story, he steals them all, and then everyone wakes up in Whoville Christmas morning, and they all gather in the square, and they start singing. And they're all happy and joyful. And the Grinch is like, what's going on? And he looks there. And then as he's contemplating, Dr. Seuss writes that he comes to a realization that maybe Christmas is about a little bit more than just presents or decorations. That was Dr. Seuss's take on the commercialization of Christmas. Maybe Christmas is a little bit more, he says in the book, than presents, than Christmas trees, than tinsel and ornaments. Maybe it's about a little bit more. And in the book, he kind of hints that it, actually he doesn't actually come out and say it, but he hints that it is community, spending time with family. And that's the answer you're going to get when you watch, a lot of the popular TV shows. What is the spirit of Christmas? It's the spirit of togetherness. It's the spirit of cheer. It's the spirit of giving. You know, every year they have on TV this Christmas light fight battle, where they pick, you know, the fanciest, over-the-top Christmas displays. And one of the way that they score it is one of those sections is holiday spirit, Christmas spirit. What does this embody, Christmas spirit? And by that they mean, you know, does it give cheer? Is it happiness? Is it about the neighborhood? Is it about togetherness? Or is it about, you know, helping others and giving to others? That's what they think about what Christmas is all about, what the spirit of Christmas is. The church has responded differently. Christians have responded differently to, you know, Christmas being all about material things. Some people, and I met a lady when I was in grad school, that just had just tossed all the Christian holidays out. And she's like, I don't celebrate any of the Christian holidays. I'm like, okay, so what do you celebrate? She says she celebrates all the Jewish holidays. I'm like, you're not even Jewish. And so, like, they've just gone totally to the one extreme and says, well, you know, if Christmas is all about gifts, forget about Christmas. Right? We'll celebrate something else. Or then you have other Christians, other people in the church that, you know, just double down on Christmas. Just like, oh, well, we gotta, you know, get that bumper sticker that says, keep Christ in Christmas. We gotta, you know, have an extra large, extra gaudy nativity display. We just gotta make sure to tell everyone that Christmas is not about presents. You gotta come to church. You gotta have a big, you know, Christmas service. You got some churches having, you know, live animals come in during the Christmas show. It's nice if it works. The goat doesn't start eating the chairs or whatnot. And that's another reaction against, the commercialization of Christmas. But to really get to the heart of what Christmas is all about, we have to get to the heart of what the Bible says. Why Christians have celebrated Christmas for the past 2,000 years. You know, before the gifts, before bumper stickers, before How the Grinch Stole Christmas, before all that, what has Christmas been all about? What have we celebrated Christmas for? And so let's look in the book of Hebrews. Right, so you can look in your own Bible on your phone, or there's a Bible under your seat or in the seat in front of you. Just think of it as your flotation device. If this church ever flies out of the air and crashes and lands in the ocean, you always got a Bible under your chair. Book of Hebrews, chapter 2. What page is that in the church Bible? 846. Okay, so page 846, Hebrews chapter 2. To understand, while we're turning there, to understand what Christmas is all about, we have to understand Jesus. Because, like the bumper stickers or not, Christmas is all about the Christ, and that's just another term for Jesus. But to understand really what Christmas is about, we need to understand two things. Who Jesus is, and what he did. And so to understand that, we're going to look at Hebrews chapter 2, verse 9. I know the bulletin says 10, but we're just going to back up a little bit and go to verse 9. But we see Jesus, who is made a little lower than the angels, now crowned with glory and honor because he suffered death, so that by the grace of God, he might taste death for everyone. Now, not a very common Christmas passage. There's no angels, there's no babies apparently in this passage, but it talks about who Jesus is and what he did. In fact, the whole of what, you know, Christians call the gospel is right here contained in this verse. If you want to know what Jesus did, you just need to look at this verse. What did Jesus do? It says Jesus was made a little lower than the angels. Now, that's not, he was created a little lower than the angels. The first part, the first chapter of Hebrews is all about how Jesus is greater than the angels. He's God. That he is God's son. And that's what the first chapter of Hebrews is about. And so when we get to the second chapter of Hebrews, now Hebrews is saying, now that God, that is Jesus, was made or became a little lower than the angels. What's he saying? That's just a poetic way of saying he became human. Right? So here we have the Christmas story. Jesus, God, became human. For what reason? What did he do? It says he suffered death. He suffered death so that by the grace of God he might taste death for everyone. Okay, so Jesus was born, took on a human body, so that he could suffer and die and taste death for everyone. Now, that taste death is not like, you know, in those old movies where the king, you know, he doesn't know whether his food is poison, so he's got the taste tester. And he's like, okay, you got to taste this wine a little bit for me, and if you're dead, I know that wine is not the best drink that I should be drinking right now, and if you're still alive, then I'm going to finish the rest of that wine. That's not what Jesus does. Jesus not like say, oh, here's a little bit of death. Oh, it wasn't so bad, so you guys can have it. Saying he tasted death for us means he took it for us. Means the death we were supposed to die, he took. And that's what Jose talked about during the first part, during the worship. Why did Jesus come? Because we were on death row. We were created for a relationship with God. God created Adam and Eve, put them in garden, says, enjoy everything I created. Right? And they were supposed to have, they were born, they were created for this relationship, this close relationship with God that was going to be like a father and a son and a daughter. It was going to be this family in the garden. But you know the story of Genesis where Adam and Eve betray God. They commit, in political terms, treason against God, the creator of everything. And in the same way, all of us commit treason against God, because he has created everything, and he is the ruler of all, and we would rather us be in charge, right? We say, you know, all that stuff that you created, God, that's nice. I would love to enjoy all that good stuff, but I want to enjoy it on my own terms. I want to live my life my own way. I want to be the one who calls the shots. And so, because of this treason, we are sentenced to death. The Bible calls that treason sin. And Jose said before, the wages of sin is death. Well, the punishment for sin, for disobedience, for treason against God is death. So all of mankind is on death row. And so Jesus comes. Jesus enters into death row. And he suffers and he tastes death for us. That means he dies for us. I can also physically die, but he tastes that final spiritual death for us. That final punishment for sin he takes. And that's what Jesus is all about. That's why we celebrate Christmas. But what I want to focus on this morning is, why did he need to be a baby? Why is Christmas so important? And that's great. We celebrate Good Friday, Easter. You know, Jesus paid for my sins. Now I don't, you know, if I believe in Jesus, I don't have to, you know, die. I don't have to be separated from God. Now I can have this close relationship that I was created for with God the Almighty. But what's the big idea about a baby? Right? If a baby is born, you know, the affected persons are the immediate family, the mom, dad, and you know, maybe the grandparents and uncles and aunts. But for everyone outside of the family, it's no big deal. Right? There was no big announcement in the heavens when my first daughter was born. You know, none of you knew me at this point in time, so you guys didn't send me a card congratulating me. What's so important about Jesus being born as a baby? Why did he have to be a baby? Why couldn't he just come down, like, you know, as a full-grown man and just maybe just appear right on the cross? Or, you know, why is this so important that we have Christmas? This, what in the church we call the incarnation, that's God taking on human form, accomplishes, at least in Hebrews, we're going to look at three things. You know, like pastors like 3 points for the sermon. So there's going to be 3 points. So let's read verse 10. All right, we're all going to be focused on verse 10. To answer that question, why did Jesus need to be born as a baby? What's so important about this baby business? Some of you are like, I don't even like babies. Verse 10 says, in bringing many sons to glory, it was fitting that God, for whom through whom everything exists, should make the author of their salvation perfect through suffering. That's a very packed verse, so let me read it again. In bringing many sons to glory, it was fitting that God, for whom and through whom everything exists, should make the author of their salvation perfect through suffering. So there's 3 things in that verse that explain why Jesus needed to be born as a baby, why he needed to become human. Why couldn't he accomplish this remotely from heaven? The first thing in the beginning of verse 10 is he brought many sons to glory. And he expounds on this in the next few verses. Let's start reading in verse 11. But the one who makes men holy and those who are made holy are of the same family. So Jesus is not ashamed to call them brothers. He says, I will declare your name to my brothers. In the presence of the congregation, I will sing your praises. And again, I will put my trust in him. And again, he says, here I am, and the children God has given me. Jesus took on flesh, became a baby, so that he could have brothers, to extend God's family. Now, if you are not like me, say if you were an alien from outer space, I cannot call you brother. And if you're an alien, I don't even know whether you know male or female, you know, gender types even exist. But I can't call you brother, I can't call you family, because obviously we don't share any DNA. We don't look alike. I don't even know whether you have the same number of arms or legs than I do. So it's hard, or even impossible, for us to call Jesus brother if he never comes down, if we never see him, if he never takes on a body. We can't call him brother because he's not like us. He's something totally different. But Jesus came, took on flesh, and is now like us. He's on our same level. He's like us. He's got a body just like we do. Did you know that in heaven, Jesus right now, at the right hand of God the Father, has a physical body and will forever? Jesus is like us. And so he says he came down, well, Hebrews says, Jesus came down, became a human, took on human flesh so that he could be our brother. Why is that so important? Because when we appear before God the Father, Jesus can tell the Father, he can point to us and he says, this is your son, this is your daughter. Why? Because this is my brother, this is my sister. That's what he says. Bringing many sons and daughters to glory. Right? The old Greek word sons just encompasses both genders, sons and daughters. So when we get to heaven, we can be God's children because we are Jesus' brother and sister. That's how family works, right? The siblings of my daughters are also my daughters. And so the siblings of Jesus are also the children of God. And he does that because he took on flesh, because he became like us. And so we can call him our brother. Okay, so that's the first thing. Jesus became a baby. Jesus had to take on flesh so that he could be like us. He could call us brothers and sisters. We could have a family relationship with him and also with God the Father. The second thing, back in verse 10, he says, he calls Jesus the author of salvation. Now, author doesn't quite fully give the meaning of the Greek word behind it. If you're reading online, if you have your phone, the new NIV gives a more appropriate word, which is pioneer. Pioneer. Pioneer is someone who comes first and allows others to follow. I guess originally when they translated the NIV, they picked author because the author is the one who, you know, kind of creates the story first and so other people can read it. But pioneer has a closer meaning because it involves treading the path. And there have been many people and, you know, in the history of America, in the history of the world, that have been these examples of great pioneers, whether it's Lewis and Clark, who pioneered the way from all the way the East Coast to the West Coast, or pioneers like Armstrong on the moon, or, you know, in Christian circles, maybe Robert Morrison, who translated the Bible first into Chinese. Before these people did what they did, no one could do it. It seemed like an impossible task. And these people became pioneers so that others can follow. I mean, how many people now have traversed from the East Coast to the West Coast? And many of us have gone back and forth. I'm sure none of you have been to the moon, but there have been other people to the moon since then. And so many people, especially downstairs, have read a Chinese Bible. And even since then, many other people have come up with different translations of the Bible in Chinese. Why? Because these pioneers went first. And so Hebrews calls Jesus the pioneer. Let's read in verse 14. Since the children have flesh and blood, he too shared in their humanity so that by his death he might destroy him who holds the power of death, that is, the devil, and free those who all their lives are held in slavery by their fear of death. For surely it is not angels he helps, but Abraham's descendants. Jesus had to be born a human, had to become a baby to be our pioneer. He tasted death first, so that by his death, verse 14, he might destroy the power of death. He made a way for us to the Father. Before Jesus, you couldn't get to God. You couldn't restore that relationship, because to restore that relationship between humans and God, humans have to pay for the price of sin, which is death. And after you're dead, you can't do anything else. But Jesus comes and he dies and paves the way so that others can follow after him. What's the most important thing about Jesus becoming a baby? Well, pioneers are only useful if they start from where you start. Right? A pioneer is no good to you if he starts way ahead of you or in a different plane. So let's say you're cooking, you know, it's Christmas time, you're cooking something for the rest of the family, and say, you know, you're making a dessert, you gotta make a pie. And you pull up a recipe and you get your ingredients. But the problem is, the recipe says, you know, you just go to the store and buy a pre-made pie crust. And so it starts with this pre-made pie crust, and it says, then you just mix the ingredients together, and you put it into the pie crust. And you look at the ingredients before you, and you just see you've got some flour, and you've got some, you know, some other things to make a crust, but you're not at the step of having a crust yet. That recipe doesn't do you any good. It hasn't started at where you're at. It's like if Lewis and Clark just started the expedition from, you know, Nevada or something like that. You know, we can't follow him because he's already ahead. And so Jesus, to be a pioneer, to be that one to forge the way to salvation for us, need to come where we are. He started where we are, as babies, as human flesh. And so by following Jesus, we can have that relationship with God that he has pioneered. That's why it's so important that Jesus become a baby. Okay, so Jesus needed to take on flesh. He needed to become a baby to be our brother, so that we can be God's sons and daughters. He needed to take on flesh to be our pioneer in salvation, to be the author of our salvation. Let's go back to verse 10. Lastly, God made Jesus perfect through suffering. Right, that's not to say that in heaven, Jesus was not perfect. That's not the kind of perfect that Hebrews is talking about. The kind of perfect Hebrews is talking about is the perfect kind of Savior. So, you know, most of you, when you go home, you know, the door's locked. You know, it's New York City. You shouldn't be keeping your doors unlocked. And to unlock that door, you pull out what? A key. That key did not always fit that lock, right? It starts out as a blank, and metal has to be shaved away before it fits just perfectly and unlocks the right tumblers so that you can get into your house. That key is the perfect key for that lock. And so when Hebrews says that through suffering, God made Jesus perfect, it doesn't mean he made, you know, he got rid of all the sin in Jesus. He didn't have any sin. But he made Jesus to be the exact perfect Savior for us, to be the appropriate, to be the Savior that fits us. Let's read, pick up, where do we leave off? Verse 17. For this reason, he had to be made like his brothers in every way, in order that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in service to God, that he might make atonement for the sins of the people. Because he himself suffered when he was tempted, he is able to help those who are tempted. By becoming a man, becoming a baby, taking on flesh, says Jesus was able to make the perfect sacrifice. He was able to be that kind of high priest, you know, fulfilling all the things that God talked about in the Old Testament. And we're not going to get into that. We got into that a lot when we studied Leviticus. But Jesus has made the perfect sacrifice because he shares now our flesh. He shares our situation. When we're going through time of suffering, when we experience something hard, a lot of times some people want to comfort us, right? They want to come alongside. They want to help us feel better. They're very well-meaning. But if they don't share the same experience that you do, their words can sound not encouraging. It can sound kind of mean or calloused. You know, like if you go through, you know, you just had a really rough week, a really rough test, and your parents are like, oh, it's okay, I understand. And deep down, hopefully you don't say this out loud, no, mom and dad, you don't really understand. Or maybe, you know, the person who your professor or your teacher made up a test and made it really hard. And he says, and when all the, you know, the answers come in and, you know, he knows that everyone failed, he's like, yeah, I know it was a really tough one. And you're like, well, I know you made the test, but you didn't have to take the test, right? You don't have the ability, you don't have the privilege of saying, you understand my suffering. Back when I was at a previous church where the leaders decided to fire all the full-time staff. One of the leaders that had been part of the group that had, you know, chosen to fire everyone, you know, said to me, "You'll be okay. I understand. I lost my job too once." And outside, I'm like, "Oh, okay, that's nice." Inside, oh, I was so mad. Inside, I'm like, no, you don't understand. You have no idea. Yes, you had a job, a 9-to-5, with coworkers who said, okay, well, I don't think you're the right fit here. You know, you're fired. You're laid off. You know, maybe the finances aren't there. There's no place for you. You have to find another job. You understand that. But I had been in this church for years. This was before I got married. The church was my family. I spent so much time with this church. I was pulling in, well, if it was, you know, a regularly salaried job, I was there, you know, 50, 60 hours a week. This was my family. And now my family had told me. You know, they had a family gathering and they said, well, Dan, we don't want you in this family anymore. And now here's one of these people saying, oh, I know what I was like to like lose a job. Like, no, you don't. You don't understand. I just lost my job and I lost my family too. You don't get the privilege of telling me you understand. We can say that to other people, but guess what? We can never say that to Jesus. You've been tempted, he's been tempted more. You've suffered, he's suffered more. You've been through hard times, he's been through worse. everything we've experienced. He can come in that situation, and he has the privilege, he has the ability to say, yes, I understand. Because he took on our flesh. This is not someone who just created the whole world, and he knows, mentally speaking, yes, I created the world. I know academically what you're going through. Jesus became flesh to go through our situation, to go through life. And so when he says, I understand, he does. So verse 18, because he himself suffered when he was tempted, he is able to help those who are tempted. And this is so important. This is why we need a Jesus that became a baby. Because he knows what we've gone through. He's not just someone who just, can say, it's all going to be okay. Just take my hand, we're going to get through it. He's the one who has walked life through with us. Jesus, taking on human form, walking with us through this life. That is why Jesus needed to be a baby. He came, and he meets us where we are. And he leads us. He's the pioneer. He takes us on his way to salvation. And he comes before the Father. He brings us. He presents us to the Father, to God. He says, Father, this is your son. This is your daughter. I walked with him. I walked with her. We've been through life together. Now accept this child. This is what Christmas is about. That's why the church has been celebrating it for 2,000 years. The wonders of Jesus, God becoming flesh. And the wonders that he did. Let's pray.